The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. White Man's Burden. The idea of peaceful competition is an invention of economics professors. War, conquest, and plunder accompanied capitalism from its inception. With the emergence of the world's first commercial powers in Europe in the 15th and 16th centuries, violence was the rule rather than the exception. As the merchant capitalists became powerful, they depended upon their home governments to extend their markets and sources of raw materials and goods by force. What we know as freewheeling pirates on the open seas were often employees of one state, hired to capture and plunder the booty stolen, extracted, or extorted from some part of the world by another state. The market and the state intertwined, producing a system of competing states, fighting in Europe, North America, and Asia for control of the world's trade. In the European powers' struggle for supremacy in North America, Native American peoples were deliberately pitted against each other. European encroachment on their farmlands and hunting grounds, and the introduction of European diseases decimated their ranks, pushing them westward and forcing them to cling to survival in tiny enclaves. Massacres were common. Marx described in Capital how, quote, "In 1703, those sober exponents of Protestantism, the Puritans of New England, by decrees of their assembly, set a premium of £40 on every Indian scalp and every captured redskin. In 1720, a premium of £100 was set on every scalp. In 1744, after Massachusetts Bay had proclaimed a certain tribe as rebels, the following prices were laid down. For a male scalp of 12 years and upwards, £100 in new currency. For a male prisoner, £105. For women and children prisoners, £50. For the scalps of women and children, £50. End quote. This earlier commercial form of imperialism, which as we've seen also involved the slave trade and forced labor, gave way later to a new form of imperialism based on the rise of industrial power. At the time Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, industrial capitalism had developed only in Britain and a few European countries. But as the 20th century approached, capitalism became a truly global system. The relatively small capitalist enterprises of the early phase of industrial capitalism gave way, in the process of competition and crisis, to monopoly, the dominance of one or a handful of giant conglomerates over a single market. With the growth of monopoly capitalism, capitalist production burst the bounds of the nation-state and was forced to seek outlets overseas. The result was not only economic competition, which led to its opposite, monopoly, but military competition between the great powers on an international scale. The period of the 1890s found the most powerful new industrialized states, Britain and France, and soon the United States, Germany, and Japan, scrambling to divide the world between themselves into colonies or spheres of influence. The new imperialism was marked off from its predecessors by the sheer scale of the conquest. In 1876, for example, Africans controlled almost 90% of African territory. By 1900, Europeans controlled 90% of African territory. Indeed, the entire surface of the globe was conquered and shared out between a tiny number of powers. The great powers sought colonies and semi-colonies in order to secure sources of raw materials, produced with cheap, sometimes forced, labor, and investments, as well as to keep out competing empires. In southern Africa, black Africans were forced off their land and compelled to work as cheap laborers in gold and diamond mines, making a handful of men, like Cecil Rhodes and J.B. Robinson, extremely rich. Parentheses. Knowing this, I wince every time I turn on the radio and hear a bouncy advertisement for J.B. Robinson jewelry. When gold was discovered in Matabeleland in the 1880s, Lobengula, chief of the Matabele people, refused to accept a treaty he had been tricked into signing that gave Rhodes and his associates the right to mine for gold anywhere they wanted. Rhodes, who was already rich from mining diamonds, organized an army and invaded Matabele land, massacring thousands using the Maxim gun. Each of the 672 soldiers in Rhodes' army was promised 6,000 acres of land and 20 gold claims. This is how Britain brought enlightened rule to Africa. The massacre prompted the poet Hilaire Belloc to write, "Whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun and they have not." The case of the Belgian Congo is the most horrific example of how the effort to extract maximum profit could lead to mass murder. King Leopold of Belgium formed a society called the International Association of the Congo, whose, quote, noble aim, was to render, quote, lasting and disinterested services to the cause of progress. The association's lasting service was, in reality, to provide a humanitarian cover for naked plunder. Leopold established a system to force Africans in the Congo River Basin to bring in ivory and rubber. Historians estimate that Leopold's humanitarian enterprise led to the deaths of roughly 6 to 10 million people between 1885 and 1908. This genocidal mistreatment of Africans was extremely profitable. The Anglo-Belgian India Rubber and Exploration Company made a profit of more than 700% in the Congo. The impact of British rule in India was no less atrocious. India, on the eve of its conquest by the British in the 1750s, was economically as wealthy as Europe. But forced labor, the wrecking of India's textile industry with cheap British manufacturers, and the destruction of India's traditional irrigation and granary systems all combined to wreck India's economy for many decades. Tens of millions of people died of starvation in a series of devastating famines. In Britain, criticism of the stinginess of its famine relief in India was brushed aside on social Darwinist grounds. Every benevolent attempt made to mitigate the effects of famine and defective sanitation, Finance Minister Evelyn Baring assured his colleagues, only, quote, serves but to enhance the evils resulting from overpopulation, end quote. Aside from the construction of railroads, which in any case the British set up only in order to transport troops and move India's wealth out of the country, India was for a long period underdeveloped by British imperialism. If the history of British rule in India, concluded historian Mike Davis, were to be condensed to a single fact, it is this. There was no increase in India's per capita income from 1757 to 1947. End of section.